Good morning. For those of you who don't know me well, my husband Andrew and I have been blessed to be part of this church for roughly 2 years now. Andrew was born and raised in Chico, and I fell in love with this town roughly 15 years ago when I came to Chico State as an undergraduate. We have since traveled around California chasing work and education. We've lived in South Lake Tahoe, the Bay Area, the Central Valley, and Los Angeles, and returned to Chico a couple of years ago. Right now, we're at an interesting point in our lives. I recently completed my master's degree in history, and Andrew just completed his PhD in philosophy. We both currently teach part-time at Chico State, and Andrew teaches at Butte College and Feather River College, too. We're at what feels like a very transitional point in our lives. We've been incredibly fortunate in our paths thus far, but we're impatient to start the next phase, namely home ownership, children, and putting down roots. But we are also abundantly aware that we need more permanent employment in order to comfortably approach this next phase. Additionally, our two dreams, one of living in Chico, and two of finding a full-time teaching position for Andrew, may not be compatible. These are the things that have been on the forefront of our minds lately. Now, in order to better understand how we're approaching this stage of our lives, you should know a couple of things about me. I think it may be useful to illustrate one of these character traits through a childhood story, since we often get humorous glimpses of ourselves through who we were as children. My mom loves to tell the story of the first time I learned to walk. After tottering around the room for a minute or two, use this instead, okay. My mom loves to tell the story of the first time I learned to walk. After tottering around the room for a minute or two, I had the startling realization that I did not know how to get back to the ground from a standing position. She says I ended up buckling my knees and falling onto my padded diaper bottom. I was fine, but I found the experience unpleasant. After that, I opted not to walk again for 2 months, having learned that standing up was just too risky. All this to say, I was then, and I'm still now, extremely risk-averse. Andrew would tell you that I'm a worrier. He's not wrong. This avoidance of risk often comes in the form of extensive planning. In 2013, as Andrew was wrapping up his master's degree at San Jose State, we started making plans for what to do next. We decided we'd love to spend a year abroad. We researched a great deal and identified two programs that could send us abroad for free and potentially even pay for higher education. The first was a program called the Gates Cambridge Scholarship, which would have paid for a one-year master's program at Cambridge University in England. The second was the research arm of the Fulbright program. The Fulbright program has many teaching opportunities around the world, but fewer research opportunities, so we were setting ourselves up for an uphill battle. We also picked an extremely competitive location, Spain. Getting one of us into either of these programs was going to be difficult. Bad odds, but we were trying to get both of us accepted. We must have put 100 hours in each on all the statements of purpose, applications, translating things into Spanish, and so forth. At the same time, Andrew also applied to some PhD programs, you know, just in case the abroad thing didn't work out. This illustrates another trait about Andrew and me. We are really hard workers, and I am, in fact, a bit of a perfectionist. I'm willing to put the time in to get things done well, but I struggle with situations where things are outside of my control or where risk plays a notable role. In applying to go abroad, we just had to plan as if acceptance was a realistic possibility. I'll get back to more on this later. In our current predicament, figuring out what comes next, my way of coping is to try my hardest to plan my way out of uncertainty. And let me tell you, it is not terribly productive. I'd like to think that sometimes this mindset illuminates new options that we hadn't considered or uncovers potential problems we ought to be aware of. But if I'm honest, I know that most of the situation is outside of my control. And most decisions will come with a dose of risk. In the midst of wading through this phase of my life, Ben asked me to give this sermon for Sunday. After considering the readings and discussing them with Ben, it began to feel as if these passages had a great deal to say to me about this moment in my life. And they offer wisdom to all who might also be seeking greater stability, more control, or simply a better world. In Isaiah, God promises the coming of new heavens and a new earth. He promises this will be a time of great joy and lists many sorrows that will cease to exist. No more shall the sound of weeping be heard or the cry of distress. No more will people die young. He also promises many good things, that people will build houses and get to live in them, will get to plant vineyards and enjoy the fruits of their labor. He promises that they shall not labor in vain or bear children for calamity. In each of these promises, God does an interesting thing, because while he is identifying the good he will bring, he simultaneously acknowledges the many issues that bring people sadness in this world. Each of us has struggled, is struggling, or will struggle with deeply painful problems in our lives. We are fortunate in so many ways, and it is good to count our blessings. But this does not take away the pain that coexists with our joy. Back in 2014, as Andrew and I started to hear back from Cambridge and the Fulbright, we were extremely disappointed. We'd been accepted to Cambridge University, but we would not be receiving the scholarship. So tuition and housing would be $45,000 each, if we decided to attend. Not a good option. And we simply didn't get into the Fulbright. Those hundreds of hours of planning were really feeling like a waste, especially as Andrew started to get rejection letters from PhD programs. When I think about the pain and joy that intermingle in our lives, a famous British poet comes to mind. William Blake, who lived from the mid-1700s to the mid-1800s, was part of an artistic movement called Romanticism. Although the term Romanticism might seem to suggest lovey-dovey, candles, and romance, it really was more about embracing imagination and emotions more broadly. One of my favorite passages of William Blake's poem, Auguries of Innocence, he declares, "It is right it should be so. Man was made for joy and woe. And when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine." And God acknowledges this in Isaiah. He knows that joy and woe are woven fine and promises to rescue us from the painful parts of these human lives we lead. Personally, God's promise that they shall build houses and inhabit them, they shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit, is something that I want to grab hold to with both hands. The question that keeps bubbling up for me, though, is when? When will these things come to pass? Today's reading from Luke similarly speaks of changing times. However, Jesus is not just foretelling good times. He also warns that before times get better, they will get worse. His followers ask, "Teacher, when will this be? And what will be the sign that this is about to take place?" But Jesus does not answer directly. I have to say, being the diligent planner that I am, I don't think I would have handled this well. When a question does not get answered in a meeting at work, I'm most likely the person that says, "But wait, can we get back to X? What should we do about that?" I would not be surprised if there was at least one impatient disciple that day saying, "But Jesus, you didn't answer the question. When will this be?" But this is not what Jesus wanted his disciples to focus on. In fact, he asks them not to plan. He tells them that a time will come when they will be arrested, persecuted, and given an opportunity to testify on their behalf. Yet he urges, "Make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance." For me, and probably for many of us, this is very counterintuitive. Wait, you want me to go into this situation unprepared? At this point, I feel like Andrew and I are entering the next phase of life unprepared, and it's uncomfortable. I know that here in our community, there are many people currently trying to decide whether they will rebuild their homes in paradise. Others may be trying to decide what to do about difficult interpersonal relationships or perhaps financial problems. To some extent, we are all trying to strategize and plan our way into better lives. And I will be the last person to suggest that planning is a bad idea. Hard work and intentionality are important to help in helping us to build fulfilling lives. In fact, 2 Thessalonians reminds us of the importance of hard work. Certainly, we should make preparations. But Jesus reminds us that we cannot and should not expect to plan everything. He promises to care for us and lead us. In Luke, he says that the reason the disciples should not prepare their own defense is that he will give them words and wisdom that will surpass anything their opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. If God is going to provide anyway, what would months of planning do for the disciples? Offer a few stress stomach aches or sleepless nights, maybe. But what good does it do to worry now over a problem that is out of our hands? Change is coming, but we cannot know when or exactly in what form it will appear. Dutch writer Corrie ten Boom, who helped Jews escape during the Holocaust, famously said, "Worrying is carrying tomorrow's load with today's strength, carrying 2 days at once. It is moving into tomorrow ahead of time. Worrying doesn't empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength." And this is not what God intends for us. In the end of our much-planned journey towards that idyllic year abroad, Andrew and I found ourselves not headed to Europe after all. Instead, we packed our bags for Los Angeles, where Andrew was scheduled to begin a PhD program at UCLA. This was not what I had planned. For one, it wasn't Europe. For two, it was Los Angeles. I had some well-developed prejudice regarding Northern California as the clearly superior part of the state. Plus, I had an aversion to big cities, so this was not what I had in mind. But it worked out. I found a good job quickly, Andrew found some faculty that he enjoyed working with, and we had quite the adventure. Now looking back, Andrew and I can't imagine having gone abroad. Now, as we're impatient to put down roots, we realize that while that year abroad could have taught us wonderful things, it would have also put us a year further from our goal of putting down roots. Now, as Andrew and I make big decisions in the coming months and years, we will try to place our faith in God to provide us with wisdom and a clear path, just as Jesus promised to his disciples. I will do my best not to overwhelm Andrew with my overplanning a future I cannot predict. I will do my best not to let my fears, my tendencies to be so risk-averse, keep me from trusting God. I will remember that sometimes what I have planned for myself is not what is best for me or for those I love. Luke acknowledges that we will encounter difficult times, but he also promises that God will guide us and that we will come through the trials better. We must walk by faith, embracing the unknown, because the unknown is only unknown to us. To the God who loves us, nothing is unknown and nothing is impossible.